You're listening to Confessing Animals with Jen Harris and Vanessa Arrico, rebel poets, real rebels, really talking poets, rebelling and listening.
Okay, don't interrupt me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Confessing Animals podcast. I'm Jen Harris.
And I'm wild woman Vanessa Arrico.
I was like, what are you pausing for? What is she about to say? We have a great conversation for you today. Rachel Puckett, she, her, hers. Rachel is a lifestyle and wedding photographer residing in Columbus, Ohio, who has dreams bigger than her body can handle at the moment. When her seventh grade biology teacher enthusiastically insisted the students were all scientists, her eyes lit up and she received the title in earnest and has looked at the world with curiosity and the hunger to understand ever since. Her love of writing and photography take root from the lineage of irreverent storytellers she comes from, and she finds inspiration from artists who speak to the whole experience of humanity rather than the blind sugarcoating that just scratches the surface of living. After spending the first 30 years of her life as a witness to the inner workings and intricacies, she's now embracing her voice, however shaky and ill-equipped, to embody the richness of life and call to others who are seeking the same, knowing that intuition and communal suffering hold the treasures we seek. You can check her out at honeyandsmokephotoco.mypixieset.com and social media. You can find her on Instagram at honeyandsmokephoto. So this conversation with Rachel, what a gift, huh?
Man, Honey and Smoke is such a perfect name for her photography business. Like, her photos are so beautiful. You have to see them. But this conversation, woo, we dive into women who run with the wolves. And if you don't know, you're about to know the wild woman archetype, feminine psyche, power.
Reclamation of a name.
Woo.
I know. Just this was truly a journey back to oneself in many, many ways. And the conversation that we had was so tender and vulnerable and very optimistic. Rachel has been with us for a while now at WWKC. And, you know, as you do in a community of people, you see people go through seasons of life. And we've watched her go through a dark and heavy time, and we watched her, you know, come up for air, and she is blooming right now in a way that's just really extraordinary. So I'm so glad to catch her in this time.
I know she's moved through this difficult time. You know, we get into divorce and to change, and she's moved through it with such grace and beauty and excitement almost, and just watching her come back into her own or into her new self. And yeah, she's such a bright light.
Resilient. So resilient.
Yes.
All right, y'all. We are going to get into our interview with Rachel Puckett. You ready?
Let's do it.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Rachel Puckett. Thank We're happy you. You're here.
Thank you. I'm really excited to get to be with you guys just alone, you know, because I always trip over my words, but especially in bigger groups. So I'm excited to just have you guys. Yeah.
I respect this. I feel like I become very performative in large groups of people. Like, I turn on that like oldest child class clown shit really easily. Intimate groups, though, this is my love language, like one-on-one, let's hang out.
Yeah, I know. It's my favorite part, too, because it's like, selfishly, you know, we get to do this podcast and dive in deep with you guys and like get to know you in a way that we just don't have time for during class. And since we're not hanging out in person, there is no like before or after hangout in class anymore. You know, like we can't like mill about after class and get a drink and just keep the conversation going. So, you know, yes, I'm very happy to be intimate and alone with you too.
Yeah.
This is kind of like, I feel like podcasting now is what like being a photographer in the 80s was though. Because I got so many friends who were like, "Ooh, I'm a photographer. I'll take your photo naked. What do you want?" Right. And I fell for it. You know what I mean?
This is like the more PC way of asking our friends to get naked.
Yeah. Do you consent to us staring at your soul for 60 minutes? Do you mind?
I consent 100%.
I love
well,
it.
Well, I mean, you know, not to mash you in with the sexiness of the 80s photographers, but why not? Darling, you are a photographer. You are a lifestyle and wedding photographer. So let's talk about, are you moonlighting as a photographer? Are you a writer and a photographer? Like, let's just talk about how you wound up at a writing workshop as a lifestyle and wedding photographer.
Okay. So I always thought that I had to choose one, you know, but I'm seeing now that I don't have, and it's actually everything, like all of my dreams and desires are coming together and playing into each other. But I've, those two things, photography and writing, have been with me since like I was younger. So I can't really distinguish, but there's times that like, I feel like I can't use my voice to say what I need to say. And so photography is there. And there's times when I'm like, I just have to get it out in the way that only words can. So both. But I'm like new on the journey in both of them, like taking myself seriously and believing that I can. So I don't know. Yeah. I mean, right now, money is made through photography. But
a lot of your photography, I guess from what I've seen on Instagram, is representing this beauty of womanhood. And like, I just think of beautiful women in the forest, basically, like whether like they're having dinner, they are pregnant, they are celebrating, just being alive, being comfortable with yourself. Like I get a lot of like confidence and beauty and like just being you in this open environment. Like, is that correct?
Yeah. I'm already wanting to cry.
We did it. Yes. Podcast is over.
That's exactly my dream. Like I started out with family photography because I thought there's no way anybody would want to like just be weird and get their picture taken or just be themselves. Like, so family photography felt like a really safe place to begin. In a different way than like I had seen, I'm not saying I'm the only one, but like I've seen a lot of family photography that's just like smile at the camera, you know, but I wanted to actually like get to the emotions and the dynamics between people. But my dream is, women, focused. Yeah, for sure. To, cause I mean, obviously that's my experience, you know? And I've been on one end of the, continuum of like having such low self-esteem and self-worth and not seeing myself as beautiful and not seeing myself as capable or strong or joyful or anything. And, I fought to get to where I am and I like see it in other people too. And I just, that's really where I come alive.
It's like if the book Women Who Run With Wolves was like visually presented. They're like, yes, there. She just held up the book.
It's on the motherfucking desk right now.
Yeah. Yes. That, okay. Can we, since that's up. Okay. The story, since you've obviously read it, I don't know if you have, Jen.
Let's tell all of our listeners what we're talking about and tell me everything.
Okay. Okay. So, she gathers stories, myths from like all over the world and archetypes and stuff. And, she just lays it all out there for, cause you know, women, so much of us is like buried away or put down by capitalism and patriarchy and just everything, colonialism. And this helps to like reconnect with like who you actually are. At least that's my experience. Yeah. Well, so one of the first stories in the book is about La Loba, and she's this old, what they said, like mostly hairy or just like always fat. Like there's all these different iterations of her, but like she's just walking through the desert collecting bones, and she'll gather the bones. And when she's like had a full skeleton, she'll lay it out and she'll just like sit by the fire looking at the bones, trying to figure out what song she's going to sing over the bones. And so then she does. And as she's singing, like pieces start to come together and like the tail curls. And like then like at the last, it comes alive. And she has like all different kinds, but usually it's wolves. And so the wolf will come and like run away. And then at some point in the desert, she'll like transform into a woman and just walk out into freedom. And I feel like that is like what I'm really good at. You know, I've always been a listener, and like I observe things and nuances and stuff. And I don't know. I feel like on one hand, it feels pretentious to be like, oh yeah, I'm doing that, but I am doing that, you know? And so, yeah, that's where I am with writing and photography.
I think that it's not pretentious. That's the thing, right? Like the breaking down of the toxic structural relations that we understand as women is to be joyful and jubilant in our own experience, right? Yeah. Like, you know, Vanessa's pointing out the aesthetics of your work, but they're telling a bigger story. This wildness, this freedom, you know, I don't know what everybody's experience with the forest is, but what mm-hmm. I know about my own experience is it's the place where I take the deepest breaths.
Yeah.
You know, it's the place where I feel the freest. Everybody has to have this book. It's Women who Run with Wolves. What's her name?
Clarissa Pinkola Estes. I'm probably saying that wrong, but we'll link to it in the show notes for sure for anyone who has not read Women Who Run with the Wolves: Myths and Stories of the Wild Woman Archetype.
Yes, and it's a thick book. It's a dense book. It's a book that you take your time reading through. You're probably not going to sit down and like, you know, consume the whole thing at once. But this reconnection that you're doing in your work, this like equating women with nature, with beauty, with strength, with stamina.
She talks about, she's created a new lexicon for describing the female psyche.
So it sounds like these are the interweavings of the work that you're putting out in photography. And I know that in writing workshop, not to dive too much into what a safe space that is as far as content goes, but you've been going through this really significant transformation. So I guess what I'm wondering is how is that shaping you as a creator collectively and on the individual mediums?
Yeah. So I was thinking about this, something similar, like I can't, you know, cause the topic, at least for me, is redemption, and I can't separate my personal and professional, because it's all like bleeding into one another and informing another. So I started doing earlier, I keep thinking it last year before I found out. So I've gone through a divorce since not everybody knows. I've gone through a divorce and there was an affair. So before I found out, I started this self-portrait project because I just wasn't seeing myself in my life. I'm a mom of three kids. I've been a stay-at-home mom. We homeschool. Like my life has been focused around my family. And even though I like set out with the intention of not losing myself in motherhood or marriage, I definitely did. And so I remember like I was reading this book and like, yes, that is all within me. Like I feel that, you know, cause I was so restless and so frustrated. And, I was going through like a whole process of coming home to myself. And I was like, I need to see who I am outside of being a mom and being a wife and just being a woman. And so I started that project and it was really hard to be seen. That's something I always struggle with. So it was like all the things that, matter to me, like I've experienced by putting myself in it too, you know? And I have forgotten your question.
No, I mean, I think you're tapping into it now, this conversation of how your transformation has and is occurring and how it's affecting your work.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So I was experiencing that. And at the time I wasn't even like, okay, I'm going to like start a business. Like it was just for me. It was like, I need myself in my life. And so I was doing that. And then, others wanted to do the same. And it was cool to hear their experience of seeing themselves in a way that they hadn't seen themselves before, you know, and that they wanted to see themselves that way, but like, who would do that, you know? So yeah, it's just built one on top of the other.
It's such a powerful translation, this way that you're, I mean, and I think that's what truly makes you an artist. It's what makes all of those of us who lean into life in this way of like, when what you had relied on breaks down, you know, leaning into that and facing it. I know it's being willing to, and only being capable of processing it through the act of creation, I think is, that's the thing that sets people apart, right? Like mm-hmm. I definitely turn to books when I don't have the answers to the questions of my life, mm-hmm. but I'm also kind of, I think there's a balance between people who will read like a relevant book to help with their wholeness and people who invest in self-help. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And there seems to be some balance in there where art is created like right in the middle of those two things where mm-hmm. you're neither sure nor seeking. And this, the way that you're translating your own realizations into your art is really, really beautiful.
Wow. Thank you.
Are you starting to see yourself more, you know, through this photography, through the writing?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been, I wish I could, like, that's one thing. So I was thinking, several months ago, I remembered how I had begun the self-portrait project before I found anything out. And like at that time I thought I could like see myself clearly, but I was still held back by so many self-limiting beliefs and these like, okay, well I can be wild here, but I can't be my full self here in these places, you know? And so now after having gone through the whole process so far of what I've done with, literally having to leave every kind of sense of security behind, and seeing that like my real security is found within myself and what I'm capable of, and the other people around me too. Like it's about being in myself, but also, like there's one aspect of like, you need to hear your voice. You need to see yourself, but you also need to let other people see you. And like trust them to help you and love you. I don't know. Cause I put my whole safety and security in one person, you know, and I thought I couldn't be anything without him. And so I'm learning that I am more by myself and with just like the greater community, you know, I don't know.
I think, yeah, absolutely. This is such a relevant subject. And I think it's something that, for whatever reasons that life creates us the way we create us, Vanessa and I didn't seem to get the memo that we were supposed to like wife up and have kids. I don't think that either one of us avoided it. I don't think that the cultural influences were particularly different. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know what it was, but we didn't get that info. Yeah. And so to see people who come to change by force, and look at it next to people who play with change because that's what they've spent their whole life doing. It's really incredible to me that there's this theme, I think, running through a lot of our guests this season too, yourself included, where what you were expected to do swept you away. And at some point you like grabbed onto something and were like, this is not enough.
Well, you know what's crazy? I was like, you, like, I did not want to get married. I did not want to have kids. It was like, when I, got in relationship with him, I was like, this is what I choose. This, like, I want it now, you know? And even before that, like I very much had in my mind that like I was going to live my life like pretty independent, like not relying, like just traveling, just doing whatever I wanted to do. And so then it was weird to like morph into like, okay, my whole life is for other people, you know, and then to like be sucked out of that and like, okay, no, I can't, that doesn't work, you know?
I'm so glad I've always kind of hooked up with other artists because I can remember this feeling and saying it out loud was so crazy. Like when you're with somebody new and you're kissing or you're fooling around and like that magic energy is flowing between you two. And I was just so wrapped up and I was like, I just want like to take a piece of me and a piece of you and like make something new outside of us. And I was like, that's literally like having a baby. But like, luckily, like we created artwork instead of a baby. You know what I mean? Like, I know what that feeling is. I know getting sucked up into that feeling even when, oh, this was not my planned trajectory, you know, but it's like, so circling back, so you were married, there was an affair, you're divorced. So has revenge played a role at all in this process? Because it's like, I remember when you first came to class, you seem much lighter and brighter and happier and like,
now, like, rather than then.
Yes, now rather than then.
And yeah, I just want to clarify. Always,
like, not that you weren't always stunning and glowing and present, but I felt a sadness or a darkness. Like, you could tell there was, you were definitely going through something. And now, like, I really do see in you, like, something has been lifted. But, like, you know, did you go through, like, that grieving process, you know, it's like, oh, the anger and the this and that, like, has it moved from revenge into redemption story or I don't know, talk about that.
Are you working on your revenge right now?
To me, like the closest thing I've gotten to revenge that like really feels like revenge, is I noticed, and it's cool because I've spoken with a couple other people that have gone through this and they've experienced the same thing, which I thought, anyways, but there were times like I was not thinking about the circumstances at all. I'd be like getting something out of my fridge or brushing my hair. And then all of a sudden, like I would just have this, like my whole body, just like a fuck you, you know? And at first it felt really stupid and silly. And I also was having to deconstruct the idea that I was crazy because I wasn't, I was just made to believe I was crazy for so long. To actually like let it out, like, at any time, it was, really powerful to finally like, acknowledge that within myself. Like, yeah, what you did was fucked up. Like, fuck you, you know? And so
I've been cheated on. I've slammed the refrigerator door for no reason at all. Just yelling at the sky, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe those arguments that you have to have with yourself in your head, you know, it's like the things you didn't get to say or like just the, it's a continuation. It's like still happening in your mind. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, yeah, fuck you. Like just out of nowhere one day.
Yeah. And maybe I'm, you know, cause I got married when I was 21. So I haven't had like lots of breakups or anything. So maybe this is very common for people who haven't been
married. It's just, it's a very natural thing to process this kind of, this enormous burst of grief and rage. And, you know, you're talking about gaslighting and like, there's all these things that when you have to undo it, that like, you can't really control the schedule of that train.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's necessarily common, but when you're deeply invested in somebody and then you experience a betrayal and a loss like that, it feels relevant in my own life experience. And it's like, I've absolutely been there where it's like, how could you, how dare you, fuck you. What are you doing?
You were 21 is really young. So it's like, not only are you like, you're getting out of this marriage, but like, you're also like no longer the same person. You're not like a young kid. Like, I still think of 21-year-olds as like kids at this point. You know what I mean? Like, you're getting to know yourself, like as a woman, as an artist, as a single person, you know what I mean? Like, there's already such a transformation sans this person or this relationship, but like, what a growth process, you know what I mean? Like awakening, you know, to yourself.
Yeah. It was wild. Cause you know, I was Rachel Puckett before, and I had a very strong idea of what Rachel Puckett meant. And so now I'm like, oh, like, okay, yeah, there are certain things that, yes, like, she's still in here, but then it's like, oh, no, I can set those things down and take on other qualities that weren't even present in my marriage, you know?
Yeah, you don't have to go back to the Rachel Puckett. Yeah. Like, it's just like, you're continuing forward as Rachel Puckett, whatever that means now.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's so powerful to claim kind of this thing that you just claimed of, like, my maiden name. So I knew who I was, and then I got lost in this idea, as one does. That's what mm-hmm. love does to you. It drags you completely out of your own experience. And that's the best and the worst part about mm-hmm. it, right? Mm-hmm. You leave who you were behind. But there's this element of returning that you're kind of insinuating that you're moving towards. Mm-hmm. And that reclamation is so important. And I see that in your work consistently.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, that was one thing. Like, not only, like, am I coming back to like my voice and things like that, but specifically my body. Before marriage and everything, there's been things that took me outside of my body, and I couldn't trust my body, couldn't believe in my body. And there's been things like, because even though I didn't want children, you know, to begin with, they completely changed my life in the sense that, like, they brought me back to my power. There was this time that I was talking with a friend, and she was a couple years ago, and she mentioned how she felt powerful. And I was like, how often do you feel powerful? Because the only time I've experienced power, my own power, is in childbirth. So anyways, I was like, how often do you feel powerful? And she thought about it, and she's like, often. And that really shook me, because I'm like, how does somebody feel powerful often? You know? But, like, through this whole process, even before the divorce and stuff, but, like, coming back to myself and coming back to my voice and coming, like, literally coming back to my body and feeling the sensations in my body and knowing that that's also my intuition and that I can trust that. Like, it's this whole process that I've been on that. So, yeah, like, everything feels like redemption for me because it's all coming back, you know?
I love that everything feels like redemption. That's incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
And good on you for focusing on that rather than revenge. Cause I know I got some mean streaks in me where I'm like, ooh, no, bitch. Like, I'm not going to forgive you just yet, you know, but I recognize when you've got to, you know, you got to sink or swim.
Yeah. Well, but I think that's a good thing too. Like, I didn't rush the forgiveness process. And I had to actually, through this, I had to come to terms with my anger because I never would touch it before. Like it was way too scary for me. So to learn how to feel my anger and let it be and let it come out too, definitely helped in the, like, I think if I would have rushed, which is also what I feel like we were, at least those raised in Christianity were taught, and women were taught to, like, rush to forgiveness, you know? But it really helped to, like, be angry. Even though I didn't move towards many, like, outward revenge, type things, like, to feel it in myself was enough, you know, to know that I'm capable of it. But.
Right. Just to acknowledge it. I mean, you have to say, yes, this hurts, and yes, this sucks. And acknowledging it is the first step of moving on, right? Because, mm-hmm. like, that is no longer your story. And now you're onto a new story. Like, you're fostering a new relationship.
And the relationship is with yourself.
And it's been really incredible to, like, see how I was complicit in some of the things, you know, like where I had abandoned myself and where I didn't let myself really stand in my own truth, you know? So it's been really hard to acknowledge, because nobody wants to acknowledge where they fucked up, you know? But to be able to see, like, oh God, like, I did that to myself, you know, in this instance, or, you know, whatever. And to kind of be able to hold myself from both, like, like there's many times that I'll go through, like I'll walk in the woods or whatever, and I'll just have some sort of feeling. And I imagine like my little child self, like walking next to me and being like, what do you need right now? You know? And so to relate to myself as like a mother and as a child is, I don't know. It's a relationship I haven't had before.
I think it's such a sign of growth and maturity that you're willing to acknowledge your own, like you said, your own complicitness in this experience to some degree or in specific instances, right? Like that's something that I found myself in this place lately where I've heard and said and communicated my own bullshit so many times that now I'm literally just being forced to put it down out of annoyance for carrying, yeah. You know? And I don't want to be right. Like that's not the purpose. I want to be understood. I want to be clear in why I'm reacting this way, even if it's the totally wrong way to react. But like, I got no investment in right anymore. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah. I used to like growing up, I was like, that was probably like my most commonly used phrase was like, I know, you know, I always felt like I was right and other people were wrong. And it lasted into my 20s, but now like, I don't care if I'm right. I don't care if I make mistakes. Like I just care to see what mistakes I made and to own up to it. Cause there's so much that happens in that.
Right. That profession is just like, oh, thank God. I don't actually have to carry this facade of bullshit around. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know why I reacted that way. You know, like I'm a work in progress.
Yeah. I think it's so powerful because then like, so for instance, my ex, he would always, with any circumstance, even if it was work or whatever, he would be like, oh, I can't do this or say this because, and I'm like, you're allowed to be human, you know? And I think owning our humanity helps other people be like, oh yeah, that is completely normal. You know,
we had that earlier this week. We were talking about, you know, scheduling the podcast and having to reschedule some appointments because we both just have things going on in life where mm-hmm. our normal scheduling day isn't working out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, first of all, we do this for free. Secondly, we're setting the pace in our own lives, like the mm-hmm. priority, the stress, the mess of this, it is not worth breaking our backs over. Like and I know that, girlfriend got booked for a gig because, a counterpart in the community was sick and could not do this big job that they had. And her reflection on that was like, I'm so grateful that we now have a network of people who are willing to say like, my kids are sick or I'm sick and I just can't pull through. So even mm-hmm. in a gig economy, you have like somebody to help you pick up the slack, you know,
yeah.
Like I think the world is changing in that way, but it's because we're all becoming that much more conscious of our own needs.
Yeah.
And the more you express like, yeah, I need help. Other people are like, well, shit, me too. Yeah. You know, I don't want to carry this by myself.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's crazy too. So that was one thing, like very specifically, I've moved through different like lessons this year, and around like April, May, I was finally like coming into contact with like, oh, I have needs. Like I wasn't even aware of my own needs. And so then to realize like I can do something about it or other people can, and in ways that are so much better than how I would try to do it, you know, because when you're so used to like only relying on yourself, you miss out on so much.
Man, I really like that aspect of it, you know, bringing it back to the community, and you don't have to do everything alone and you don't have to be isolated, and partnership and community and raising kids and creativity can look all sorts of ways, right? And in the age of like the text message, right? Like we expect like an instant response, right? And it's like, I think people are starting to slow down and aren't responding right away and taking the time and saying like, I just can't do this, or rescheduling, you know, like I was jumping through weird hoops trying to make the schedule work. And I was like, wait, I don't need to be doing this. Like, Like, I don't have to set these unrealistic expectations on myself. And talk about the complicity, you know, earlier you mentioned, you know, where you found areas, you know, like where you were complicit in certain things. And it's like, that's something that I've carried and I think about a lot in my life. Like, because I kind of feel like any bad thing that has happened in my life, I'm complicit in it. Like, I was an active participant in placing myself there. Like, nothing befell me. I was not born into some tragedy. Like, the trauma I carry, I'm like,
oh, I am so complicit in this.
That's such an intense thing to, like, interrogate in your own life.
Yeah.
I've certainly looked at my own experience that way and just been like, damn, there are acts, things that have happened to me that, like, not my fault, not my experience, you know, not what I came here for. Mm-hmm. But there are other experiences where I'm like, what the fuck did I think was going to happen? You know?
Yeah.
And that's a humbling thing to take accountability for your presence in that.
Mm. And there's like a dance between that. Like, so say something happened that you had no control over, but then in the future, you know, you're like, that has changed you to where you will be more willing to accept something, or, you know, to change the way you even see yourself, like, oh, okay, I deserve this. Or I, you know, there's so many aspects. It's like, it all just bleeds into another.
Yeah. And that goes back to, like, you know, you asking your friend, like, how often do you feel powerful? And, like, that's just, like, something that I want to ask myself on a regular basis. Like, there's one thing I mention all the time that my therapist said. He's like, what's the kindest thing I can do for my body right now? Mm-hmm. So that's something I continuously ask myself. And now I'm going to ask myself, like, how often do you feel powerful? You know, and I've been feeling powerful because I'm building a fucking cabin with our bare hands, like, two... Yeah. Weird poets in the fucking desert trying to play with wood and saws and hammer and nails. Like, it's very bizarre, but, like, building something physical with your hands like that, mm-hmm. and having your body ache in these ways that you didn't know was possible, and then, like, sitting in your crooked structure and feeling so proud about it, you know, it's like sitting in a physical poem that I just wrote.
Mm. I love that. Yeah, like, in line with that, there were several, I mean, I periodically ask myself that too, but it only happened when, like, after everything kind of fell apart and I was moving through it to be like, oh my God, like, I'm doing this, you know, and I'm actively feeling powerful because of the choices that I'm making or the things that I'm not doing. But one in particular, like, because I'm the type of person, if anything would take any amount of effort, I would just, like, give up, you know? And so
this is my 2021 vibe for sure.
I'm like, I could get up and plug this in because it's 2 feet away, or I could just continue to lay here because my arm is not that long.
Yeah. And so then, like, whenever... like, we split, I was like, okay, this is that, like, I now have to do the things, you know, I have to take out the trash, or I have to fix things, or, like, kill the spiders or whatever. But my dishwasher broke and I was like, fuck. And I sat on it for a long time, like, okay. But then, like, I got really sick of, washing my dishes. So I went through this whole process of, like, learning how to fix my dishwasher. And even at the end, like, I had taken it all apart and then I was trying to put it back together. And it was so frustrating. It was so frustrating. But to, like, see, like, oh, I'm doing it, you know? And now I'm like, okay, that was a small thing, you know? But at the time, it felt huge to be able to fix a dishwasher. And I mean, I'm sure there are really big ways that need fixed, but, like, that was a small problem to fix, you know?
No, but, like, the micro, like, just feeds into the macro. And, like, and like, fixing that fucking dishwasher, you know, like, it just reminds me of just, like, any argument in a relationship, right? Like, it's frustrating. This sucks. Like, there's so many things you have to learn and figure out, and you're going to do it wrong. And, like, why is it working? And then, like, just learning the instructions on, like, how to fix this thing, you know, and then, like, oh, wow, like, I made it through this and look, it's done now. Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's just an apt metaphor for so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's another thing that this happened the spring of last year. So again, before I found out anything, and I was working through a lot of self-limiting beliefs. And so anyways, it was like getting to be springtime and I was trying to think of like what I wanted to plant in my garden. And dahlias have always been my favorite flower. But I've never planted them because I've heard that they take a lot of work and stuff. And so I just assume like, I can't do that. I'm not good enough. I can't do that. And for some reason that spring, I'm like, well, why can't I, you know? And so like I went and I got some dahlia tubers and I was so scared. It was like a visceral fear that I was just going to fuck it up. But I planted them anyways and I like watched them grow. And then it turned out I was going to be out of town when they actually like bloomed. And I was like, I'm going to miss it. And so part of me like ached, but then I was like, you know what? It's not even about seeing them. It's just, I did it. Like I believed I couldn't do it. And for the longest time, like that was the most I had done was like, I planted flowers and it really wasn't that much work or anything. But it was cool because I came home and they were still blooming. But it was like the end of the season. So I just like cut them all and gave them to my friends. And then it was even cool because I'm like, I did it and I get to share it. Like, it's not just for me. Mm-hmm. Me, it was just the lesson that like, I can do it and I don't have to keep myself from something that brings me so much joy. Because I had ached for dahlias for years. But for what? You know,
I'm so proud of you. I'm so glad that you just did it. And first of all, like, I don't know how any mother could ever feel not powerful because like every time one of my friends gives birth, I'm like, you're superhero. Like the fact that you gave birth, like there must be some kind of like twilight, like you forget what that is because like, I can't think of anything more powerful than giving birth. You guys went through like this insane alien, I created and gave life, like that there isn't anything stronger than that. Right. And like, to me, there isn't anything stronger than a mother. And like, I hate that any mother ever forgets that or never feels that fucking power and that strength. Like you brought life into this world. Like you are the power. Mm-hmm. You are it. Like, and just don't forget that.
I love it. Well, I would really love it if you would share some of your writing with us today.
Okay.
Did you bring something to read?
I did. It goes along with what we're talking about. Okay. Sacred rage. It was never called that, never given space, never set apart as holy, just wholly unacceptable, as all emotions were. I was told, the heart is deceitful above all else, and lean not on your own understanding. But my emotions were the only realities that made sense to me. Not the way I was measured, not how, even though I did everything I could to be good, I still received empty love. But my heart, I could trust the messages she was telling me. I just couldn't make a show of it. So anger was snuffed out, as was excitement, joy. Can you believe that? Joy was unacceptable. But sadness was quiet. Sadness was motionless, so I could keep my sadness. But now I stand 33 years old, learning how to rekindle the years of anger piled in a forgotten heap. It was set ablaze by one spark. At first, the heat scared me, having never been taught how to wield it, how to heal with it. I would play with it like a match, small enough to not burn down a house. And when it got too close to me, I'd blow it out, watch the smoke dance to the ceiling, and wonder what unseen gift is hidden in anger. I'm not scared anymore. I don't stick to matches. I build fires, watch them smolder, blaze, eat the wood and crack it open, char the memories, the moments I was unable to stand up for myself, speak for myself, trust myself. All the times people took my truth from me, thinking I couldn't be trusted, just like a kid with matches. But the only way to be trusted is to spend time with the fire, learning to respect its ability to devour and resuscitate life. If there's one thing I've learned, it's that I am to be trusted. The sacred rage is holy. So come close and let me show you what to do with your anger if you've never been trusted. I'll let you see how I cradle the tender and let it build into a roaring flame. And then I want to see you strike the match, feel the jagged edge of the matchbox, and an instant later, hold the spark of possibility that has been kept from you out of their fear. I want to sit in the warmth of your fire, the heat allowing us to peel off all the layers that have kept us covered and stiff. Let's watch the shadows creep away from us as we sit in the radiance of your truth. We'll share the tales of dark nights when our hearts trembled, and then we'll stare into the embers and watch them dance with the knowing that what we let burn up was just the beginning. I can feel lots of emotions, but rage and anger specifically was really hard to hold, you know. Mm. There were plenty of times, like early on in this process, that I would be sitting with my friends and they would be angry. And they worried about if it was unsettling for me, but it was good for me to see their anger because I have such a habit of like just adjusting to whatever is happening, you know, like, okay, this is normal.
But them express that anger was like, yeah. Oh, okay, that's normal too. Like anger and rage is a very easy emotion for me to access. Yeah. That's some, you know, like instead of sadness, like if you're depressed, like mine does not manifest in sadness, it manifests in anger. And so that is a very, easy. That's my go-to, right? Is that anger and the rage and the, you know what I mean? And learning not to feel that anger and rage constantly. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like I have the opposite problem. Like I'm learning more to be quiet or to adapt or to accept or just stop and breathe for a second before I react.
Well, I think the unifying factor in this is that we all have some forward-leaning emotion or a reaction to an experience that like we dial back to seek that balance, right? Because, you know, Rachel, you've mentioned the word normal a couple of times. And I think that it's so interesting because it's relevant to like, if you're in a situation long enough, this becomes normal. And then to be outside of that and see the world behaving differently and the world interacting with you differently than you have in your normal life it's truly jarring sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, it was so good to be like, okay, like whatever I'm accepting isn't necessarily worth adjusting to, you know, that it does demand some sort of action that I'm not used to operating in, you know, and I've talked to lots of people this year about anger specifically. And it seems like either anger is a first reaction or you don't touch it, you know? So learning how to like dance with it, I think is good for all of us.
Thanks for listening to Confessing Animals. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review so more people can find us. And if you want to support the show or get access to the extended video casts, join us on Patreon, confessinganimalspodcast.com.